Welcome to our second study. There'll be a few things we're going to catch up from last week, but the topic is the millennium. And thank you for coming, because I've enjoyed getting ready for this, and I think I finally got the order of resurrections in my mind without a chart or anything, because you go through it enough. We're talking about Revelation 20. We wouldn't have to go there right now, but I thought the introductory pieces last week on Psalms and those kind of things, we might as well just go to the chapter. The chapter. And there's much debate on Revelation 20, but I don't know why. It's not that complicated. You read it, and it's pretty self-explanatory. So we got a quote here from Michael J. Vlock, not Michael J. Fox, for those of you that are old enough to remember that. His book, Premillennialism, is a good read, fairly short. But I didn't cover it last week. I wanted to give it to you. Maintaining balance on the millennial issue is important. For most of church history, good Christians have disagreed on the millennium, and millennial views should not become barriers of fellowship. On the other hand, the millennium is not some incidental doctrine that doesn't really matter. It's a major part of the Bible storyline and involves the nature and timing of Jesus' kingdom. The idea of a future earthly kingdom of the Messiah is not something dropped from the sky in Revelation 20. It has deep roots back to Genesis 1. A page later, it says the return of Jesus with his kingdom will be the fulfillment of the earthly rule God expects. And you know, we were at a Bible study once, and we were talking about what's the main theme of the Bible? What's the main thing? And of course, most of the guys probably say Jesus Christ. And might say God's glory. But you know, the kingdom is still coming. The kingdom is still coming. It's not here yet. We'll talk about that. But it is an important thing. Yeah, you don't want to get divided over it, but yet it's pretty easy to see what's in the Bible. Before we get to Revelation 20, we're going to take a little sandwich here, a little in between, because right at the end of chapter 19, we are seeing Jesus Christ come back again. Jesus Christ coming back on the horse. Revelation 19:11, and I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it is called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges and wages war. We're talking about none other than Jesus Christ. His eyes are a flame of fire, and on his head are many diadems, and he has a name written on him which no one knows but himself. He is clothed with a robe dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. Verse 13. Skip to verse 16, and on his robe and on his thigh he has a name, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So we're talking about the second coming of Jesus Christ. Now, we've talked last week in the Psalms about the fact that the Lord reigns, and he's going to reign in Zion, and here he comes. This is going to be the climax of the church age. He's coming down, he's going to be reestablishing, we're going to see about that in the kingdom. After Revelation 20, the next chapter, Revelation 21, starts off with that familiar verse or two. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there is no longer any sea. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice, verse 3, from the throne saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he will dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be among them. We'll probably take a look at Revelation 21 later on. By the way, the scope of this lesson is going to go 3 more weeks. Originally, it was going to be 4 weeks, but we're going to extend it to 5. But there's more to talk about. We're not just talking about Revelation 20. We might get into Revelation 21, because what's going on with the New Jerusalem? What's going on with the new heavens, the new earth, like that? So here we have the sandwich. Here comes Jesus Christ on a horse. Going to wage war, going to be the final climactic battle, and then Revelation 21, here comes Jerusalem. And it's pretty easy to see that 21 and 22, that's the end. I mean, that's going to be the total. So we're just going to look at the 1,000-year millennium, and it's the first phase of that eternal kingdom, because there's not much written after Revelation chapter 20. So we're going to look at Revelation 20. But first, just a reminder from last week, and I believe Twyla got this on the on the website along with the PowerPoint, so that would be a wonderful feeling. I was telling earlier, I've got a new smart board at school. I mean, we're talking expensive smart board. Whatever we do in class can be saved to a file, so if you're at home or sick or gone, you can look at all. Isn't that wonderful? You can not only listen to the message, but you can also go through the PowerPoint. Has this kingdom, this whole idea of kingdom, this whole idea of a king, a throne, reigning, all those kind of things, has it always existed, or does it have a beginning? And that's where we get this little bit of distinction. You can read maybe some of the commentators like, well, we can't really figure out. Well, Psalm 10 says this king, those kings reign forever. But yet, on the other hand, Daniel says in those last days, there's going to be a kingdom. In those last days, there's going to be a kingdom set up that's never going to end. So how do you reconcile, been going on forever, but yet there's going to be a final kingdom? Well, we're taking a look at millennium, Revelation chapter 20. Psalm 103 says it's going to be a universal kingdom. He's going to rule over everything. And everything means everything, all. But Isaiah says, well, the king's going to rule from Mount Zion. So it's going to be a specific spot. Well, how does that reconcile? Because he's coming back and he's going to set up his kingdom. And he's still ruling the universal rule right now, but not from a kingdom, not in that sense. We have a little contrast between, is it ruling directly by himself or through a mediator? Psalm 59 says God rules. Just overall, God rules. I mean, I'm not reading the whole verses, I know that, but yet in the same book, Psalms 2, it says, my king is going to rule from Zion. So, how do you reconcile that? Zechariah 14 says, in that day. I don't know if we'll get to Zechariah in all the scope of this five-week session, but it's got a lot of prophecy. Zechariah 14:9 says, in that day, the day of the Lord, the end. But Psalm 29:10 says that he sits as king forever. So what is it? Well, it's both. It's both. It's not a problem. Is it unconditional, or is there some kind of covenant, some kind of agreement? Daniel 4 says it's just according to his will, just by himself. He's got this rule. But yet, at the same time, Psalm 89 says, my covenant will be confirmed with him. So you get into this whole realm of who, what, where, when, and it seems like it can't be resolved, but it sure can be resolved. Revelation 20, the millennium, the coming kingdom. We'll start off with Revelation 20, verse 1. We'll go through the whole chapter. There's a lot written on it. There's a lot of disagreement. I'll show you that here at the end in one particular case. Verse 20, or chapter 20, verse 1, then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding the key of the abyss and a great chain in his hand. And one thing I've appreciated about our pastor is always, well, what kind of questions does that bring up? What about that verse? You know, who is this angel? And I don't know. I don't know. Earlier in chapter 19, there's also an angel. We don't know. What is the abyss? Well, that's where the demons go. If you read Luke, I don't have it up here, but Luke 8:31, Jesus encountered demons several times. It's not like he did. And some of them in Luke 8:31 says that they knew he's going to send them into the abyss along with the rest of them. So it's like there's a place called the holding pen, the prison cell, but they call it the abyss. The great chain must be strong enough to hold Satan, going to bind Satan, okay? Verse 2, he laid hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. Satan's got lots of names. The deceiver, you know, we can talk about the devil, Satan, son Lucifer, etc. There's several names out of the Bible. And I'm not sure why there would be a whole lot of disagreement about this. It says, he laid hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, it's very easy to see what's named, and bound him for 1,000 years. Why can't it be just a plain, literal 1,000 years? It says that. There's a lot of disagreement. And there's reasons why. We might have a little discussion on that. But it says 1,000 years. And as I was getting ready for this, the last thought that I had, because you're always getting new, what's so special about 1,000 years? Well, I don't know. But before the flood, people lived almost 1,000 years. Oh no, Methuselah couldn't have lived 969 years. Well, it says he did. So maybe this 1,000 years, you know, it's kind of like, it's possible for this whole thing to take place. The Greek word, or maybe the Latin word, which probably comes from the Greek, mil, I'm a little bit of a word enthusiast when it comes to math, but not for mil, the millennium, mil anno, anno domini. Millennium is 1,000 years, like in the Latin. So mil is not the only place for, I mean, millipede, millimeter, the millennium, those kind of things. A million, by the way, just in case you're interested in, a million is 1,000 thousands. That's why it's a million. Okay, it's not a thousand, it's 1,000 thousands, all right? First use of 1,000 years here in this, and not the only, there's 6 times it's going to be used in one chapter. And people argue about, well, it doesn't show up in other places. Well, I'm going to go through, the millennium shows up in other places because there's a kingdom coming. There's a king, there's going to be reigning, there's going to be a throne, there's going to be subjects. So it's not that big a deal, but it's going to be used quite a few here times in Revelation chapter 20. Why can't it be 1,000 years? Well, we'll take a look at that. Verse 3, he threw them into the abyss and shut it and sealed it over him so that he would not deceive the nations any longer until the 1,000 years were completed. After these things, he must be released for a short time. So an angel comes down. This chain must be, what special chain. Bang him up, toss him down into the abyss, threw him into the abyss, shut it, sealed it, wouldn't deceive it. And this will probably be brought out later, but this is interesting. If you go back to the garden, and you know, people have these ideas that the Bible's just full of stories and everything. Go back to the garden, what was it? What was the first incident? The serpent, Satan, deceiving Adam and Eve. Well, here at the end, Satan's going to be bound. He's going to be out of the picture for 1,000 years. He'll be released. We'll talk about that here in a moment. Verse 4. And I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was given to them. And I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded because of the testimony of Jesus and because of the word of God. And those who had not worshipped the beast or his image and had not received the mark on their forehead and on their hand, they came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. What a verse. There is so much in there. The thrones. Thrones, plural. They sat on them. Who's the they? I take it it's to go back to the 24 elders in the book of Revelation. It talks several places about the 24 elders. The reigning. They sat on them. Judgment was given to them. Judgment's a key word in the Bible, of course. I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded. I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded because of the testimony of Jesus and because of the word of God. Now, we have to back up a little bit. We haven't talked, we're going to get to the chart. I'm thankful to Twyla for getting the chart. What's all going to take place? The first place coming isn't the kingdom, right? The first thing coming is the rapture of the church. When's that going to happen? Well, my guess is, like I said last week, after Hillary gets elected. I think it's going to... And the debate this week didn't, I don't think it settled anything, but there is going to be a change in the country's leadership. But it's coming sooner or later. And that's going to usher in, what, the 7-year tribulation? Okay, that's not the point of this lesson, of this whole section here on the millennium, but there's things coming up, rapture, 7-year tribulation. And then, we're talking about the 1,000-year kingdom. The people beheaded during the millennium, okay? I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded because of the word. The people there in the tribulation, the saints that get murdered, beheaded, that's troublesome time. Because of the word of God, they had not worshipped the beast. We won't talk about the mark, but there's a mark. there's an interesting number, right? Numbers guy. And no, my favorite book out of the Bible is not the book of Numbers. I'm a math guy, but it's actually book of Romans because of the theology. The people that were, they came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. They came to life. We are going to reign with Christ for 1,000 years. Not because of this passage, but because of others. So there is a 1,000-year kingdom. It's after the rapture. It's after the tribulation. There are going to be a lot of people, you know, how many, that are going to be beheaded, which doesn't surprise us now with ISIS and stuff. I haven't looked at any of those videos. I mean, I'm sure you could, but just to behead somebody, I can't picture doing that or going, anyway. They had not received the mark. They came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. Saints, believers in Jesus Christ, are going to be part of the kingdom, excuse me, by reigning with him for 1,000 years, all right? We might as well have depart a little bit from the PowerPoint. Go to Daniel chapter 7. I've got a note here. Daniel chapter 7, verse 18. Revelation 20 is not the only place where it talks about ruling and reigning with Christ, about being part of that. How is that possible? I mean, for 1,000 years we're going to rule and reign. Over what part of the earth? I don't know. I'm sure it's all decided already, but we have to just go through it. Daniel 7, 18. But the saints of the highest one will receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever for all ages to come. The saints of Jesus Christ, the highest one, will receive the kingdom. There's only one kingdom that's going to matter, the millennial kingdom, coming here any day. And possess the kingdom forever for all ages to come. So, that's one verse. That's just, and of course, Daniel has a lot of prophecy. We won't go there, but since we're in Daniel, go to chapter 12. Skip a little bit. Daniel 12, 1 and 2. And so I was going through this, that chart that I'm going to show you here that Gil has handed out many times, probably over and over. It's on the website, by the way. It really puts things into focus because who's getting raised at what time and what's the resurrection order? Sometimes it's kind of confusing. But Daniel 12, 1. Now at that time, Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people, will arise, and there will be a time of distress such as never occurred since there was a nation until that time. And at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life, and others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. There's going to be a resurrection. Many, verse 2, many of those who sleep, another word for those who are dead, who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life. There's others that will be resurrected that will to disgrace and everlasting contempt. And I did a lesson not too long ago for the high school group. There's only two groups of people, right? Believers, unbelievers. Male, female. Slaves of righteousness. Slaves of disobedience, of unrighteousness. There's only two places. Heaven, hell. Eternal life, eternal consequences in hell. So, verse 5 back at Revelation. Chapter 20. The rest of the dead did not come to life until the 1,000 years were completed. This is the first resurrection. You can see already that the 1,000 years is not hard to... I mean, it's already been done. I don't know how many times. The rest of the dead, the wicked, did not come to life until the 1,000 years were completed. So basically, we got three resurrections. I mean, we got the rapture, believers alive, and Old Testament saints. We'll see that here in a moment. If I get this straight. Then there's the tribulation. Then before the kingdom. Here, I mean, that's the first resurrection as I went through this. You might get a little... I mean, I had to go through this a couple times. The first resurrection goes back to the saints, not to the rest of the dead, the wicked.
The rest of the dead came to life after the 1,000 years. The first resurrection goes back to the saints, the believers, not the wicked. And if this works, it took about 10 seconds maybe to load here, but we've got a good chart. I like the visuals. I'm a math guy. I like visual. I mean, words sometimes, reading and stuff. But if it boots up here, and of course it doesn't. Just like at school. Whenever you want to do a lesson, you try it out when you get there early in the morning, and then guess what? It doesn't work. This is where you do a joke or something, or let's see. It's thinking, a little song and dance. It's really cool when you get to it. It's the age-old debate between Mac and PC. I'm a Mac guy, but there's always complaints and or things, well... As soon as I go on, it'll pop up. Verse 6 out of Revelation. Let's let it sit and spin for a while. Blessed and holy is the one who has a part in the first resurrection. Saints, believers, first resurrection. Over these, the second death has no power. Second death, coming up here in a moment. And they will be priests of God and of Christ and will reign with him for 1,000 years. We're going to reign with him for 1,000 years. What will we do exactly? I don't know. It'll be glorious, though. It'll be wonderful. Verse 7. When 1,000 years are completed, Satan will be released from his prison. What's the point of that? What is the point of getting Satan? And earlier in chapter 19, the false prophet and the Antichrist that we were just thrown into the abyss before. And God's going to put a situation before people where you can't be deceived by Satan like Adam and Eve. You can't blame it on Satan. You can't blame it on his influence. It's going to be 1,000 years of incredible, and we're going to, next week, I don't know if I mentioned this, next week we're going to get into Isaiah, because Isaiah's prophecies are going to be, especially out of chapter 11, 24, 25, and 65, what's it going to be like, you know? I'll give you a clue. It's, some of the passages are about the wolf and the lamb, those kind of things. Like there's some description in there. But the 1,000 years, verse 7, when they're completed, Satan will be released from prison, and there's going to be an end to it. But for 1,000 years, he did not deceive anybody. Locked up, tied to the drum, etc. Verse 8, Revelation 20. And he'll come out to deceive the nations, which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together for the war. The number of them is like the sand of the seashore. You read about Gog and Magog, it brings to my mind back in Ezekiel. It's Ezekiel 38 that talks about that. I'm not going to go into a whole lot of discussion about it, but there's a final war, but the one in Ezekiel is a little different, so we're talking about two different wars, two different final endings. But there's going to be a final climactic end of all
battle. To gather them together for the war, the number of them was like the sand of the seashore. Verse 9, and they came up from the bluff to the broad plain of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints in the beloved city, and fire came down from heaven and devoured them. Total annihilation. Or we could go and look at the different things. Of course, if you read the book of Revelation, there's destruction. I mean, chapter 6 on through, there's all of those judgments that are just incredible. A third of this and two-thirds of that and all these things going on. So, they came up for the final battle. Verse 10. And the devil was deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are also. The beast and the false prophet are also. They're already there from Revelation 19. And they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. So, the deception is over. He's bound for 1,000 years, along with the beast and the false prophet. They're not going to deceive. And I think most of us here have heard this several times. The point is, human heart is just by nature. You can't blame it on the devil. You can't blame it on your neighbor. You can't blame it on your math teacher. You can't blame it on whatever. We're sinners. We're deceived. We're in need of the salvation God provides. Then comes verse 11. This is going to be really bad if I can't get to the next slide, but so does that mean if you keep clicking it, then that prolongs it for another couple minutes? Because it's going to just go back here. Oh, well, you're a gracious crowd. Verse 11. Then I saw a great white throne, and him who sat upon it, from whose presence the earth and heaven fled away, and no place was found for them. This is the great white, we call it the great white throne judgment. And I saw the dead, the great and small, standing before the throne, and books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life, and the dead were judged from the things which were written in the books according to their deeds. We're talking about the final judgment. Great white. This is going to be about, well, we're about through the book anyway, so it's about over. The dead, great and small, standing. The books were open. The dead were judged according to what was written in the books, according to their deeds. And we have to clear one thing up. We've got to make sure something's up front. Your salvation is not dependent upon your deeds. It's not whether you are done enough things. I would imagine there are some commentaries or whatever that would say, you know, see, it's based on deeds. Oh, ooh, yeah. So, how long did that take? Okay. Can blame it on the internet, right? Because it's got to go through the church Wi-Fi. And anyway, I'm not quite as up to date as Don. The resurrections, this is a great chart. I think it summarizes, it's on the website. Christ's first fruits, first resurrection, of course, Calvary, etc. All right, okay. There's a gap, obviously. It's gone on now for 2,000 years, all right? First stage, the church. We won't get into 1 Thessalonians 4 or 1 Corinthians 15, but those are the rapture passages. And I would imagine most people, if you don't think about the millennium being true, then you wouldn't think that the rapture is going to be true, because how do you get rid of one, not the other? The seven-year tribulation, broken down into 3.5 years each, all the different things that go on there, especially after the first half, the second half, gets all these things going on here. Old Testament saints and tribulation saints, we're talking about Revelation chapter 20, verse 4 here. Second stage. Here in Revelation, it's called the first resurrection. Believers going up. After that, 1,000 years, the unbelievers are judged. The great white throne judgment. All right. So we've got several resurrections, several things going on here. And again, there's all kinds of, you know this, there's all kinds of writings. There's not just one final it, and that's done. There's several things going on here. Believers in the rapture, second coming to the earth of Christ to establish his kingdom. That's when Old Testament saints, or we read Daniel chapter 12 and Revelation 20, then the 1,000 years, which, why can't it be 1,000 years? No problem. And the last great white throne out of Revelation 20:11. Now to get back to the PowerPoint. I've got a note here, 1,000 years. I always think of this, because I know it's been preached, you know, what's so special about 1,000 years. Some people might use this verse out of 2 Peter, talking about the coming of Christ, which is very topical. I mean, do not let this one fact escape your notice, 2 Peter 3:8 and 9, that with the Lord one day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years like one day. See? So like, the 1,000 years is only one day. Or, most commentators would probably say, it's very vague, it's hard to tell. Well, this is a totally different, it's like 1,000 years, those wordings, it's like 1,000. To God, a day is like 1,000 years, because he's eternal. We're not, as far as, well, we have a beginning at least. One day is like, it doesn't say 1,000 years is one day, that'd be like equals, by the way. One day is like 1,000 years. Because, the next verse, the Lord is not slow about his promise. He said it's going to happen. He says it's coming. We're guaranteed a kingdom. We're guaranteed him coming back on a white horse. Okay? He's not slow like we count it, but he's very patient. And he's very patient because don't want anybody to perish. So that brings to my mind about the 1,000 years, because, you know, but it's like 1,000 years. It's not is 1,000 years. Back to Revelation 28, now that the slide's working. Gog and Magog, final war, broad plain, Armageddon, the plain of Megiddo. Nancy and I hopefully will make it over to Israel this next year with the trip for Don. See that? They know where it's at. There's a plain there where a lot of battles have been done. The devil has deceived him, thrown in, tormented. Great white throne, verse 11. Verse 12, I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne. The books were opened, okay, were judged according to their deeds. I want to mention, Ephesians 2, 8, 9 always comes back. Because for by grace, you have been saved. For by grace. Not because of our works, lest any man should boast. It's not based on, but it does show what you do. You know, I just talked to the kids, some of the kids yesterday, about, and I've heard this before, how do you know adults, you know? What's one good indication of where you really put your heart? Well, take out your checkbook. Where does your money go? What things are you involved in? What kind of things are going on? I've had several good discussions the last few days with some of the mischievous boys that need a little counseling. So I can do that at Lincoln Christian. Bring in the Bible. The sea, verse 20, verse or chapter 20, verse 13, and the sea gave up the earth, the dead which were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead which were in it, and they were judged, every one of them according to the deeds. Hades, the temporary holding place, it's all culminating. It is all culminating. It is not a myth. It's not a fable. It is going to happen sooner or later. Death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death. The second death. Talked about that earlier a little bit. This is the second death. If your name's not in it, you're thrown into the lake of fire, that judgment, the final judgment. All right? I mentioned this earlier, but I came across, well, what do some of the other people believe? Right? What do some of the other people believe? And with my background, I went to the Catholic Church. I mean, me personally, until age 25, until I got saved, but the Catechism of the Catholic Church, what do they say? Just, how do they handle Revelation 20? Because it seems to us pretty clear. 1,000 years, reign with Christ, the devil's put away, then he's come back after 1,000 years. We'll see if this one links up. There's a website called EWTN. It stands for Eternal Word Television Network. Eternal Word. Sounds great, right? Eternal Word. But it's a Catholic station. This is from them, but it does correlate with their official doctrine. By the way, this is the Catechism of the Catholic Church, second edition. It was pretty much done under the direction of Pope John Paul II. And the person who did all of the organizing is Joseph Ratzinger, who was Pope Benedict. So we're talking about two of the most recent popes. The term end times applies to both the era of Christ's first coming and to the events immediately before his return and the end of the ages. The definitive Catholic teaching on the end times is contained in the Catechism. So you get it. It's not too expensive. But here's the part. This is just the second paragraph here. As the creed infallibly teaches. And you just stop there. As the creed infallibly teaches. What? I mean, we're not talking about the Bible. We're talking about the Catholic Church, the teaching. The second coming is associated with the end of the world and the last judgment. All right, that's, you know. Therefore, it is not associated with any earlier time such as a millennium. The Catholic Church specifically condemns millenarianism, which, by the way, is in here. These tied up together. There's not anything on my part. Specifically condemns it, according to which Jesus will establish a throne in this world and reign here for 1,000 years. So if you say there's 1,000-year reign from Revelation 20, the Catholic Church condemns that. And it's like, well, okay. She teaches instead that Jesus already reigns in eternity. Now, we took a look at some of those passages about God reigning universally over everything forever. But it says here, and that in this world his reign established as a seed is found already in the church. Already in the church. Okay? This is the 1,000 years. This is the 1,000 years, which is the Hebrew way of indicating an indefinite long time. In this case, the time between the first and second coming. So it's like any, you know, it's just a long time. It's not really 1,000 years. Why can't it be 1,000 years? It says 1,000 years 6 times. So they want to put the church, right? The church is at the heart of it. Next paragraph. Naturally, non-Catholics cannot accept that the Catholic Church represents Christ in this world. So that kingdom, and there's other views, right? Talked about this last time, that the kingdom is like in your hearts, or it's more just a spiritual kingdom, or Revelation 20. He's coming back. He's going to send up a kingdom. People are going to go into the kingdom. We'll talk about Matthew 24 and 25 2 weeks from tonight. But the Catholic Church is official, you know. The notion that Jesus will come, reign, and then depart so that the devil can trick the world again is incompatible. The notion that Jesus will come, reign, then depart so that the devil can trick the world again after 1,000 years... is incompatible with the incomprehensible dignity of the Lord and his love for his people. And it's like, where did that come? If you know anything about the Catholic Church, the main teaching comes out of Matthew 16, where upon Peter, I will build my church upon this rock. So they are the church, they are the kingdom, they are. And if you say, you know, it's the first phase, the 1,000-year kingdom, is the first phase of that eternal, he is coming back, he is going to set up a kingdom. It is going to be established in Zion, Jerusalem, okay? Why? Why 1,000 years? Well, don't know for sure, but a couple final thoughts if we can get to them. Current present age, Satan's prince of this world, Ephesians. Saints are persecuted on earth. We don't have much persecution in the United States, but maybe. We do serve Jesus. We might. We're told to be expecting it. The millennial kingdom, Satan is bound, and we're reigning. somewhere, somehow. Okay? Conclusion. There's a literal, physical, earthly kingdom coming to this earth, Christ ruling from with us, with his saints. It's not based solely on Revelation 20. I picked that up with some other of the writings, like some writers might, I don't have specific names, but you're just basing everything on Revelation 20. There's the Psalms, there's Daniel, there's Isaiah, there's Jesus' teaching in Matthew, even in the book of Acts, for instance, before he left. What were the disciples? What was their question? Lord, is at this time you're what? Going to set up your kingdom. It's still coming. Why can't it be? You look at 1 Thessalonians 4, some of the other passages about it's not just in Revelation 20. It is there's a king coming. There's going to be a time. There's a reason. All that stuff is going to happen. We'll talk about the wolf and the lamb and some of those other things. Who's going in? Who's going to be? But it is a wonderful, wonderful idea. God's going to reign on this earth for 1,000 years. I'm sure most kids that I teach would say, well, that's a long time. Well, I don't know how long I'm going to live. I'm 57 now. I might make it to 100. And when you look back, you'll probably go, wow, that went really fast. Right? Because there's no problem. There's nothing wrong with a 1,000-year kingdom on this earth by our King. So, that's all I have for tonight. Now comes the tough part, the questions from the floor.
So when the saints come down to reign, are they in their heavenly bodies? And then there's still people here in their earthly bodies?
That's a good question I will look into. The question is, okay, he comes down and sets it up, and we're going to reign. Are we going to reign right away? I take it we're going to reign right away in glorified bodies.
I think Don, talking to him in some of his Wednesday classes, says that they're the people that, I don't know how that works, I guess there will be people that will be saved, that will be in Jerusalem, in their natural body, but the saints that come down will be in their glorified body. I think.
Because resurrected, putting on the imperishable, 1 Corinthians 15, but that's why Matthew 24 and 25, when that kingdom comes, there's going to be people here on this earth. Well, what are they, we're going to talk about Matthew 24. You got to come back. Okay. But again, this doesn't talk about that. But that's the question. We're going to reign, I take it from right away, glorified bodies, somewhere, maybe in your old neighborhood, or somewhere. Yeah, I don't know. But
it's the first resurrection is definitely the Old Testament saints like Daniel and stuff. And that whole millennial kingdom is essential, mandatory, in order to prove that our God fulfills the problem to Abraham and Daniel and David and everybody. So they will actually come back and actually physically not just think there might or not know about a Christ in some future time, but actually personally witness Christ, accept and rule with him. Now, from my perspective, the church kingdom can't be inherited by blood and so forth. Mm-hmm. So this millennial kingdom is the first phase. I prefer to call it the day of the Lord. It's really his day. Yeah. He gets to set up as king, as judge, fulfill the promise that he promised everybody in the past. Mm-hmm. But whether the church is there physically, no, but maybe spiritually. And I feel maybe the church is actually still in the New Jerusalem. So our true hope is the new heavens and the new earth, the eternal kingdom. And that this time is actually judgment. It's actually the day of the Lord, which is ending with the destruction of fire that you see in 1 Peter, or 2 Peter, chapter 3.
Glad you brought that up, because we haven't talked about, last week or this week, we haven't talked about the Davidic throne, the covenant of Abraham. Some of this stuff has to be when. If you just go, and Rod and I talked about this last week, if you just go from coming back and eternal kingdom, well, where's all those promises? I mean, there's some things that don't make any sense. But
yeah, I used to think the millennial kingdom was just maybe a lack of maturity or understanding. But, you know, in debating with all millennialists and various things, I've come to the conclusion that if you don't realize that there is a thousand-year reign, then it's a doctrine of demons is what I'm kind of getting to. Because right now, Christ came as a servant. Today, he's at the right hand of the throne reigning, but mm-hmm. with his Father. Mm-hmm. In the new heavens and the new earth, after death is put away, he will actually return the throne to his Father. Mm-hmm. So if you don't think that there's a thousand-year reign for him, you're denying Christ as king, basically. Your Christ is not our king.
We might go more longer than 5 weeks because. But see, there's so much. Yeah, there's questions that come up. Who goes in and what do we do and what do the saints reign with and how does that fulfill the prophecy of all those different prophets? But there's so clear there is a king coming and there is a kingdom and he's going to rule over. I had the slide last week. To have a kingdom, you got to have a king. You got to have somebody on the throne. You got to have subjects that you're ruling. And they got to be actively. I mean, you can't just be sit. I mean, it's got to be an active rule. Well, when's that going to happen? If it's not the millennial kingdom, well, kind of like the Catholic Church.
What we're looking for is that new heavens and new earth, and when we are.
I'm just looking like forward to getting through to the first quarter of school.
Okay, and that too.
One at a time, but But I'm sure that leads to more questions because we got these judgments, and you know.
Well, during the millennium, I mean, there will still be people having children, so they will be born sinners, and they can be saved. So, I guess.
We haven't talked. That's Isaiah's prophecies and these other ones. That what's going to happen? Will people be born? Yeah. Well, why wouldn't they be? Because.
Instead of death.
So. Yeah.
Well, physically, during the millennium, where will we be? I mean, like, is there United States left? Is it just everything going to be just more in Jerusalem? I know there's nations and they'll come there, but. Where will we be? Just in Jerusalem?
On the outside hip.
The good life.
Right. I'm asking where is that?
I don't know. Can we put in a request? No, I don't know. It doesn't. I'll look into it. I don't think it says because it's. I don't know.
You know, if the people raptured, I think, you know, we're actually the bride of Christ and we'll be co-reigning with Christ. Whether it's in heaven or if he sends us down here as angels, or who knows? But that, you know, that's his prerogative.
Well, we come back with him on the white horse. We have to ride white horses here if I figure that out, right? I don't ride horses. But we come back. So I assume we stay here.
And that leads to another question, you know, like, well, what kind of power do we have? Do we just watch?
Yeah.
Do we just... Well, no.
There's like three locations where we come back. It's armies, angels, and then kind of like the saints. It seems to be three locations. So it could be a combination of army, angels, and a lot of people all coming back to finalize his kingship.
But I know the torture will be over because there won't be any math homework. The torture is over because I learned last year, like 2 years ago at Lincoln Christian, that God created the universe, but Satan created man. And the punishment for Adam and Eve when they left the garden wasn't all these other things. It was to do math homework. Kids taught me that, by the way.
To name and count.
Yeah. So let's close. We got some dessert, but let's close in prayer. Lord, thank you for your word. It is clear. Help us to be godly stewards of your grace and share that with others. And thank you for the prophecies. Help us to get them straight in our mind and worship you as the God of eternal, just the plans you have made, and we look forward to Christ coming back, and may we be just glorifying you until that day. Amen.